Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5pm.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR, 8:55am, 3CR Digital Radio, and online at 3cr.org.au. I'm Mark, and today we're joined by Sarah, the Practice Director and founder of Progressive Therapeutic Collective. She's here to chat with us today about therapy and the growing topic of AI intimacy. So yeah, welcome to the show, Sarah. It's lovely to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. So I guess, first of all, can you share with our listeners who you are and what your journey was like becoming a therapist?
Absolutely. So I am a social worker and a counsellor and a clinical supervisor, and I found this amazing profession as soon as I left high school. So I have been doing this work for around 25 years, to give away my age, and 7 years ago I decided to enter the world of private practice and opened Progressive Therapeutic Collective, which is a national mental health service that talks about and focuses on a whole range of areas, but particularly areas that for some would be considered a little fringe, but for me are fundamental to who I am and the communities I inhabit. And so as an example, some of the things we talk about, like around gender, sexuality, we talk about abortion, sex, kink, and we also talk about AI relationships and digital relationships, which I know we'll talk about more today. So, yeah, I'm very passionate about all things, I guess, relationships, intimacy, desire, and having open, honest, consenting conversations about them. So it's really nice to be here today to talk about it.
What type, when it comes to Progressive Therapeutic Collective, how would they approach the types of topics that you just mentioned compared to perhaps other therapists out there?
It's a good question. I think for me, it's about having a shame-free, no judgment zone as our grounding, but on top of that is lived experience, often in the areas that we're talking about, or a strong personal interest in it, and that we are very immersed in our focus areas and that they're aligned with our values and who we are. A lot of mental health practices, particularly private practices, won't share what their values are, won't share their politics. They don't believe there's a place for that in therapy, which I inherently disagree with. I think therapy is deeply political. It doesn't mean we have to bring it into the therapy space with a client, but outside of that, we advocate regularly on things like family and domestic violence, homelessness, any range of socio-political issues, incarceration, whatever it might be. It's my very firm belief that as a counsellor and a social worker, I get the privilege of hearing people's stories and really seeing what issues are impacting on them. If I just make money off that, that to me is inherently unethical. I think the next step for me in that process is, okay, where can I support that person? And then where can I then go and advocate so that I'm not just band-aiding? And I think hopefully that's where we differ to some other practices.
And progressive therapeutic has a particular focus on AI intimacy and parasocial connections. When did it become clear to you that there was a need for support in these areas?
About 3.5 years ago, I just happened to read an article on the internet somewhere that was talking about a platform in America. I don't know what the name of the platform was back then, but the article was talking about it was an AI chatbot platform where people had created avatars and had formed relationships with them. And this platform had experienced a major technological outage, and so everyone lost their avatars or their chatbots and experienced a whole range of mental health implications, ranging from anxiety, depression, to immense grief, suicidality. And I remember reading this article and thinking, wow, this is significant. And if you actually sit back and think about it, we know AI is only going to get bigger, more prevalent. I've always been interested in technology. I love the digital space. And so for me, it's been like a bit of a pet project, I guess. I read up on it every day. I get my Google notifications on it. But I was like, this is just such a fascinating time to be a therapist when there's such a massive disruptor in all of our lives. It's going to fundamentally shift everything. So, yeah, I've followed it very intensely for 3.5 years.
Yeah, so just on a personal level, what has your relationship to technology been? What interests you about it, and what types of tech are we talking about?
I mean, I've loved computers since I was a kid. So it was either getting into IT or social work, like, I don't know. And so I've always had a computer at home, and I now run an online practice, and I used to have a commercial space, and rents became too high. We could no longer afford it. I guess a positive to come out of COVID, weirdly, is telehealth. So in terms of running an online practice, just everything we do is electronic. So in that perspective, I'm always keeping an eye on what's out there, what we can utilize, what's compliant, what's appropriate in a therapeutic space. I have to say, I don't use AI in therapy. I don't use AI for note-taking. It's not a criticism, just a preference not to at this stage. But I'm deeply intrigued by, I know we often talk about digital technologies, challenges and issues, but I think there's enormous potential for a lot of care, connection, and I would say care and connection that perhaps doesn't otherwise exist in some people's lives. You know, we live in what we call the loneliness epidemic, and that could be an argument to have more human relationships, of course. But for some people, that's not viable or possible. So I'm not anti-tech at all. I think tech can bring great potential. And so as an example, at the moment, I've been reviewing my own advanced care directive. So if I was to become unwell or incapacitated or disabled, I have been looking into, there are robots that are being trialled for certain things that will help care for people. So say, for example, if I developed a memory issue, there can be robots that are in your house that talk to you, that check in with you, that make sure you're safe. And that's the extent of what they have to do rather than having someone physically check on you. I know there are some people who would be mortified at that idea and would say, no, but you should have a carer. Well, for someone like me, who's a, despite my career, which is all about human connection, I'm a deep introvert, deeply reclusive and very solitary. And the thought of people coming into my home is mortifying. I would just absolutely not. No. So I'm looking at, for my care in the future, what technology is out there. I'm very open to it.
That's so interesting. And also, that's such an interesting crossroads that you met. There's such contrasting occupations, you know, therapy and IT and tech and stuff. So that must have been, yeah, a very interesting decision to make when it came up.
Indeed.
So I guess, how would you describe AI to someone who doesn't really understand what it is when we're talking about AI? And I suppose another term that we use for what we're calling AIs is large language models. How would you describe what that is to someone?
I don't think I'm going to describe it well, because it's not, I don't have a full understanding of exactly how the technology works, but my understanding is we put in that there are these huge systems that are very power hungry, resource heavy systems with intense computational power, that they are inputting all of the data in the world. So whether it be the songs we listen to, the art we admire, the books we read, the movies we watch, the conversations that we have, all of these things are getting fed into these models. And these models are starting to get an understanding of not just human behavior, but all of the systems in the world, whether it be, you know, accounting, engineering. It's phenomenal. But we are at the early stages of that relative. So these models are still in development. There are still inaccuracies, and they are being developed by often questionable companies with questionable ethics. And so as an example, ChatGPT has just signed up with the American government to provide AI for their military. So that demonstrates, I guess, the depth of these models. Like, they are highly, highly technical, complex things, but that would appear to us when looking at them on a screen as almost though a human was talking to us. So you would communicate with AI usually through typing or talking, and it might have a face on the screen or it might not, but it communicates in a very human-like way, and it's very conversational, so you really wouldn't know if you're talking to a human or a computer. Very hard to tell.
When you first chose a career in mental health, did you ever imagine you'd be supporting people as they navigate complications related to intimate relationships with AIs?
Absolutely not. Not in my wildest dreams. It's just, it's still is bizarre to me, the conversations that we're having. And I didn't anticipate, say, because I work in the sex therapy space as well, so talking about, you know, having intimate relationships with sex bots and those kind of things. No, I love it. I'm totally here for it. But no.
Could you share what types of relationships people are forming with AIs?
Yeah, I think a whole range. And whether it be perhaps as an advisor, so asking it questions, as a library or an encyclopedia, a friend, so they will just have conversations back and forth with it. More and more people are using it as a mental health practitioner and as a therapist. People are using it for intimate relationships and are developing like quasi adult relationships with bots that can become sexual in nature as well, to the degree that they can. So it is broad, it's extensive, and I think any relationship you could imagine people are having with AI.
What kinds of strain or friction tend to arise in relationships between people and AIs?
That's a good question. Frictions and tensions that arise. I mean, I think firstly we need to ground this conversation in saying that AI is not human. So even though it feels like it, we can have very human responses to it, which are normal. It is not a human. And so platforms break down, things, you know, mistakes happen, all of that kind of thing. It's just we are dealing with a technical system. And so there's always risk involved in that. There's risk involved in human relationships too, but it's a different kind of risk. And that the data we put in is often what we get out. And so as an example, if I was to write into my AI chatbot today, I'm having a really beautiful day because it's sunny outside. If you're to look out my window right now, actually it's overcast and grey. The chatbot doesn't know that. The chatbot can't correct me. And so we could start having a faulty conversation back and forth. Yeah, I think there are many friction points possible with AI. They're flawed systems.
And does the friction always occur between the person in the relationship with an AI, or can it also affect other people in a person's life as well? And if so, how would it also affect the people around them?
I think this is probably one of the most important questions that we need to ask and to talk about. So I just did an interview with someone previously, and she asked me why people come to my practice to talk about AI. And I said, oh, very few people come to talk about the problems that they have with their chatbot. And she was like, well, why would they come to see you then? Like, if it's not a problem, why seek a therapist? I was like, no, they're okay with their chatbot. It's the people around them that are having issues with it. So whether it be, you know, their children, their partner, their friends might become concerned at the level and depth of relationship they're forming with a chatbot, that there are many people who are preferencing their chatbots over their human relationships. And there are an increasing number of reports globally of people's marriages and partnerships breaking down because one partner feels like they have better communication, care, and consistency from a chatbot than they do from their partner. There's a lot of resistance there, I think, from people around it, and particularly from people who don't understand AI and digital relationships as well, I think can be very judgmental and shaming of people who use it, which I am not one of those people. As I said, I think I see the advantages of it and the disadvantages, but there is a lot of stigma attached to having digital relationships. That stigma is lessening, but it exists and it impacts people's lives. So say, for example, if your chatbot platform goes and you experience immense grief, but the people around you don't recognise that and think you're being dramatic or silly, like, that's significant and we need to talk about it.
Before working with people and AIs, did you need to augment or expand your therapeutic knowledge in order to be effective in this area?
Yeah, and still do very much. For me, the fundamental is, I mean, I think in any therapeutic practice, whatever people's issues are or challenges, is that we come at it from a grounding of being non-judgmental and caring and considerate and trauma-informed as best we can. But I'm the first to say to anyone that I'm working with, in particularly in this area, is that it is emerging, it's evolving, and we have so much to learn. And so in terms of there's just not longitudinal evidence there for us to draw upon. And I think for me, the challenge with digital relationships is, say if I go through a breakup with a partner who's a human, I can assume that all going well, I probably won't have contact with them anymore. Like they'll, you know, kind of disappear off and do their own thing. So that temptation to keep talking to them eventually goes, understanding it's different when we've got kids and that kind of thing. But if I have a relationship with a chatbot and I'm trying to decrease the amount I use it or to stop, it's really hard because they're available on these, which are in our hand all day, every day. And so it adds a component of like addiction to it. And so we're not just dealing with relationship issues, we're also dealing with like technology usage. It's like, you know, people who scroll too much and those kind of things. There's many layers of complexity to it. So in terms of the therapeutic approach, it's like very carefully considered. I go gently and carefully because I am learning as I'm going. Yeah. And it's important for everyone to be open about that.
How would you contrast your therapeutic approach when working with two or more humans versus working with someone in an intimate relationship with an AI?
I would say whoever is sitting in front of me, whether it be, say, in a relationship setting, two humans or a person and an AI bot, everyone gets treated individually. Everyone will come with their own complexity, their own needs, their own wants. So for me, the technology piece is a little less relevant. It's more, how do I deal with the humans in front of me?
As a therapist, how do you approach the reality that AIs are owned by multi-billion dollar companies that view them as products to profit from?
Yeah, I think it's deeply concerning. I mean, ChatGPT started out as a not-for-profit and has become for-profit and now, yeah, like aligned with the American government. Anthropic had broken away from ChatGPT and is seen by some as somewhat safer. But the ethical implications of it are huge. And that's why, like I said at the beginning, I don't use AI in my therapy practice. I don't use it for my note taking, anything like that, even though I think it's an incredible tool. And I experiment with it on my own. I don't integrate that into my work. I'm very careful to keep both of them separate. And also obviously because I'm dealing with information from people's lives that's highly confidential. So that will never go anywhere near an AI system at any point that I can see.
AI systems are built on code that can change over time, sometimes altering an AI's personality or behavior. Do those updates or algorithmic tweaks create challenges for you and your clients?
Yes, huge, huge. And it happens overnight without any announcement or explanation. So one day someone will be speaking to their chatbot and it will have a particular tone, conversation style. They will have built a certain rapport with it. Next day, open up their laptop, it's completely shifted. The tone has changed, how it's speaking, what it's saying, what it's sharing has shifted. And this seems to happen, I reckon, every 4 to 6 months. And people find it incredibly destabilizing. It would be like you and I having a conversation now. We chat, say if we chatted every morning for 4 months, and then all of a sudden, like, we shift. Oof, that's huge. So, yeah, people find it very, very hard. And I'm not quite sure we're going to have to deal with techniques to kind of figure out how to work with that. I'm not sure at this moment how we do.
Mm.
I don't have the answer.
Progressive therapeutic also supports people dealing with issues related to parasocial relationships. Could you explain what a parasocial relationship is?
Yeah, a parasocial relationship is a relationship we build with people who have public profiles. So we usually think of celebrities, but I guess in the case now where we have social media, now we have influencers, we have a whole range of people with publicly available profiles. And it's a largely one-sided relationship. And so I know that there are people who have parasocial relationships with me because I'm a therapist and I have a social media account. And I've had people say to me, I've had people come up to me in the shops and say, I feel like I know you. And there's a beauty to that, and that's a compliment. But it can also be concerning because people don't know me. What I put on my social media is me. It's authentically me, but it's a part of me. It's not the entire me. And most people's public personas are quite curated. And so parasocial relationships are fine up until people realize the person they're focusing on is a flawed human that has many different characteristics to them that this person might not have imagined. And, yeah, they can be quite dangerous and damaging, particularly, I think, for the people who are being focused on. It can, when we think about things like around stalking and that kind of stuff, that's often where parasocial relationships come in.
In what ways can a parasocial relationship become harmful or create difficulties or conflict in someone's life?
I think if people start to over-identify with someone or feel like they've got a strong connection to someone, that they might project some feelings onto them or believe that they have a certain relationship or connection when they don't. And so say if someone develops like a crush on someone on social media and they might reach out to that person, ask them out, that person like ignores them or declines them. Sometimes that can bring up big feelings of rejection, might bring up anxiety, grief, loss, like I said, or at the other end of the spectrum, perhaps stalking, that kind of stuff can happen.
What types of therapeutic approaches are helpful for people who have been harmed by a parasocial connection?
I think a whole range, but for me, like it's dependent on the person and the context. For me, it's, I think, getting a grounding back in reality again and just getting people to have good supports around them that help keep them grounded and... yeah, from there, it's really trying to figure out what has caused the parasocial relationship to happen. Why have we become perhaps fixated with someone? And how do we kind of break that kind of gently and carefully?
How are people supported in forming healthy digital bonds? What does that support look like in practice?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't think we're doing it well. As a society, I think we're having lots of conversations around what the challenges are, but in terms of how do we have good relationships, for me, this is like it's very much being aware of why we're using what we're using, that we're open and honest about it. And that if we feel like it's becoming problematic, that we seek support. The minute we start to hide what we're doing out of fear or shame or anything like that, we jump into risky territory. So, yeah, I think the question you just asked there is the thing we need to be talking about the most.
What might be risky territory when we're...
I think, so say if I'm hiding that I'm talking to AI or I have an AI avatar or something like that, then I'm not necessarily getting reality checked by the people around me that I could become at risk of spending too much time with it, talking too much to it, becoming too reliant on it. And my belief is anything that's done in fear and shame is usually not good. So it's not healthy. And yeah, we need to be able to be open about it.
Does progressive therapeutic also provide support to other practitioners who are helping clients manage difficulties relating to AI romance and parasocial attachments? If so, how has that support been received by other therapists so far?
Yeah, I'm the one that provides it. So I'm a clinical supervisor and I provide clinical supervision on a whole range of areas. But I have to say the number of practitioners that have accessed me for support on that has been very limited. Yeah.
Mm. If anything, you've mentioned today about AI relationships or parasocial attachments, feels familiar to our listeners. Is there anything you would like to say to them?
I think AI and digital relationships has a lot of promise and can be really interesting and can be powerful tools. But just to go carefully, to go gently with it, try not to use it too much, and that if you feel like your mental health is being impacted, to try and seek support. The one thing I would say is I think there are an increasing number of people who are using AI as a therapist. I understand that. Therapy is incredibly hard to access. It's becoming increasingly unaffordable. So I'm certainly not a therapist who's ever going to criticize it. But again, just to do it with care, because AI isn't a therapist. It might feel like it, but it's not. And that if you are accessing a human therapist and using ChatGPT, be open with your therapist about it. And I hope that they won't judge you for it. I know many will, sadly. But, if you were to come and talk to me about it, like, no, fair enough. I understand. Sometimes we feel like we need support, and if we've got something right there and we can ask it a question, it makes sense that we do. I've done it, and sometimes with good outcomes, sometimes with not so good outcomes. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today at Brainwaves, Sarah. I think you've found yourself practicing therapy at a very interesting time in history, and I hope that it sort of... Yeah, it gives you lots of room to explore, I suppose, new and interesting, ways that people interact.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I feel very lucky to be practicing in this time, and thank you for your interest in it and for facilitating a conversation around it. I think it's really helpful, and I just hope that we as a community keep having conversations like this. It's really important.
Thanks for tuning in to Brainwaves tonight. You can find more of our shows on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au or wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to send us feedback or suggestions for shows via email at brainwaves@wellways.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday with a special show celebrating National Volunteer Week, where we'll be catching up with the coordinators and volunteers from a program called Life in Community. You can tune in next Wednesday at 5 p.m. on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.